The housing market is hot. There are three times more buyers than sellers. It's more important now than ever to make sure you have your financing in place before you even find the house. Get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert LLC.
This is a Roundtable Rewind.
We start with the sad news that everyone was reacting to yesterday afternoon, and we were just discussing before the show started the passing of Mike Slive, the SEC commissioner, a guy who spent 13 years as the SEC commissioner. And to be honest and very open, I had lost touch with Commissioner Slive on how severe the prostate cancer and his other illnesses had gotten. And the passing yesterday really caught me off guard when I saw George Schroeder first send that tweet out.
Yeah, me too. I had no idea his health had taken a turn for the worse. And I hated I did not know that. It's very sad, but this was a little more private situation than the previous battles he had had. I'm fortunate that I actually saw Commissioner Slive not too terribly long ago. And aside from everything the guy accomplished, and we'll get to that, guys, he was just one of the nicest people in the world. I never saw Mike Slive be anything but the nicest guy in the world.
He made me feel important in this business. And by that, I mean, you know, a decade ago when even local media members wouldn't even acknowledge me by my name. I mean, he was the guy that was the SEC commissioner that would actually look me in the eyes every time he saw me and would say Lance.
Yeah.
I mean, look, knowing someone's name is a strong thing. It's something that I'm still not really good at. Again, Herb Winches is one of the best I've ever seen. One of my former mentors. But Mike Slive was right there. And we're talking about one of the most powerful men in all of sport would take his time from going from Les Miles to talking to a midday guy on jocks.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, he was the first commissioner for Conference USA. He pulled together a group of misfit institutions and made it for a moment one of the better basketball conferences when he was in charge of it in the country.
Marquette, Cincinnati, UAB.
Oh, yeah.
You had really good Marquette, really good Cincinnati,
Memphis.
Louisville,
yep.
Memphis with John Calipari.
That was an amazing conference.
I mean, you were talking a 4 or 5 bid league there.
Their conference tournament was must see. I mean, I remember the year it was played in Freedom Hall when Mike Anderson and UAB took Louisville to the wire. I mean, it was a great conference tournament.
And I wonder, I mean, obviously football drives the boat, but if Mike Slive had just said, Conference USA is my job, that's the only one I want to have, how long he could have kept that together. But, of course, bigger things came when he moved to the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah, you wonder about that. I mean, it would have affected all of sports because of the impact he had as SEC commissioner. He was a powerful man. I don't know that once those other egos started getting involved, he could have kept CUSA from breaking up.
I don't know, man. I mean, I'm not going to doubt him. You look at what he did with this conference. And see, a lot of people that don't realize all of the nuts and bolts and what he actually meant to the conference probably would just assume that the SEC goes in this direction. I'm not so sure.
No, you're exactly right.
I mean, from expansion to the SEC network to being such a pivotal force in the 14 playoff.
I mean, he takes over in 2002, right?
Right.
That 2001-2002 area. He takes over there. Think of what the SEC was before that. We talked about what it was from Georgia's national championship in 1980 in college football, and then what it was until they went on that string. Yes, Tennessee had one in 98, but it was not, the SEC was not the swinging the biggest stick in college athletics until Mike Slive took over. And he took over, if I remember correctly, and Greg Sankey, current SEC commissioner, will be with us at 7 o'clock. But when Mike Slive took over, remember all the infighting and probations and self-reporting, not self-reporting, but turning each other's brothers in inside the league. This conference seemed to be on a path that the old Southwest Conference was on of constant probation and just preventing the league from ascending because of all the infighting. And Mike Slive took over and shut down the infighting because he was so powerful and so trustworthy that he made everyone sort of pull the rope in the same direction.
He people laughed at him. I will never forget it. In his introductory press conference, I was there down at the SEC offices downtown. He said, it is my goal and my vision to have this conference 100% probation-free during my time here. And people laughed at him.
Yeah, I looked around the room.
People, there were chuckles in the room, like, oh, come on, man. And he actually pulled that off. I mean, this guy had a lot of great accomplishments, Mike Slive. One of them might have been that, because when he took it over, people literally laughed out loud at him for saying that.
It had to happen, Brown, for the SEC to become what it did and what it is. They had to come up with a way to, because there's always going to be that pushing the envelope in recruiting in all sports. They had to come up with a way to police it within the conference to keep the first call from going not to the NCAA.
But to Mike Slive.
That's right.
Yeah.
Call me and let's see, mm-hmm. see if we can work out the issue.
And that changed it. Yeah. And he got it. And listen, it didn't last, to be fair. I mean, people got back on probation, obviously. It wasn't a permanent fix, but he got it clean for a minute. It regressed, but he got it clean.
And I do think there were moments in time that the penalties that SEC schools got were lessened because Mike Slive helped them navigate the situation.
Right.
And that includes Alabama in the beginning, and then later on, you know, the Cam Newton situation down at Auburn. I think Mike had a really big hand in helping Auburn say, well, you know, here's this, you do this, and this, and it'll all be fine.
Yeah, Jay Jacobs said once he sat down and they went through the checklist with Mike Slive, they knew they were good.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's in
my former attorney that knew all of the ins and outs of the NCAA.
Yep. And when you sit down and he says, nope, that's okay. Nope, that's okay. You do this, do that. And then, yeah, put him on the field. Let's go.
Yeah. I mean, it is not an overstatement to say he is potentially the most influential person in the history of college athletics. And that's a lot of people that have been involved in the history of college athletics. And there are some guys that have done a lot of amazing things, but what we see college football primarily as today, Mike Slive had a massive hand in that.
He was so much more than this, but college athletics is a huge business now. And monetarily, well, you just look at the numbers. The year before he was hired, the SEC distributed right at $96 million for its 12-member schools. The league's 14 schools shared $456 million his final year.
And the SEC network, the ACC is about to launch theirs. And Commissioner Swofford of the ACC, who was very kind in his words for Mike Slive last night as well, he is hoping to duplicate the format that the SEC has done. He has signed on with ESPN like Mike Slive did with ESPN, with the SEC network. He's hoping to follow the same distribution pattern as Mike Slive did with the SEC network. He's trying not to do it like the Pac-12 network. He's trying to follow the Mike Slive.
One that works.
Well, yeah, there is a right way and a wrong way. You've got the blueprint for both.
Yeah, the Big Ten and the SEC have shown you the right way, and the Pac-12 has shown you the wrong way.
You have to wonder, did Houston do something different? Before Lance and Brown talk about the game, Rockstar Cut 4, here's Mike D'Antoni.
Yeah.
The head coach of the Houston Rockets said, hey, man, we didn't change anything.
I mean, we're not going to change anything up. That would be silly on my part to panic. I mean, you don't do that. We're very comfortable about who we are. And we can beat anybody, anywhere, at any time, playing the way we play. Now, some people might not like it. You know, hey, sorry.
That's Mike D'Antoni last night. Sorry. Didn't change anything.
Why would
he?
You change anything? You had won 62 games in the regular season. You had beaten this team 2 out of 3 times. You got to do what you do best. And last night's ball movement was about the best I've ever seen.
They passed way better, didn't they?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, the ball movement, just whipping it around the arc and getting wide-open looks. I mean, that was the problem on the other side for Golden State going against the Rockets in Game 1. But, you know, we mentioned a couple of things going off the air yesterday, things they had to clean up. They go from 18 turnovers in Game 1 to 13. They go from 6 made threes outside of James Harden to 13 made threes.
Making shots is a big difference. I think I saw, you know, Brand, you've been throwing all these inside the game stats.
I got another one for you.
Contested shots.
Yep.
I don't think the number of passes changed at all for Houston. It was just that they spread them out differently to where more players took different shots and touch the ball more.
To your point, according to Second Spectrum, which is a statistics organization, I don't know what their title means, but that's what they do.
It sounds like a lower grade cable company.
Second Spectrum?
Yeah. You're not Spectrum. You're going to be Second Spectrum.
I'm stealing my neighbor's cable. Yeah. Second Spectrum. First of all, two stats for you, and you tell me how important these are. They had 12 uncontested three-point shots off of assist and made six of them. In their loss Monday, they only had five.
Yeah, well, that's important. That's hugely important. You get open looks, you're typically going to knock them down, and to knock down 50% of those, it's a big number.
Here is the stat, though, that a lot of people are making a big deal about, was the isolation plays. In game one, James Harden had 26 isolation plays. He only had 16 in this one. Chris Paul increased from 10 to 16. Basically, they just spread around their isolation plays a little bit better. That's what it sounds like.
But they play more isolation basketball than anyone.
They do.
Not even close to the NBA. And James Harden is like 4-1 to the next guy.
And then Tucker got more.
Well, he had 22 points.
Yeah, he got more points, obviously. But he also was worked into the isolation more.
The biggest factor last night was Eric Gordon. Eric Gordon was fantastic. Chubby Eric Gordon, I've always enjoyed watching him play.
But that's where, and I wanted to bring this point up, I think we've learned that when you get to a certain point in the NBA playoffs, the most important position on the court is the people that play the position of the other guys. Because when we watch these games, it seems like the other guys are the one that get the team over the hump. When Cleveland is good, it's LeBron and Love, but it's the other guys. Last night it was Harden and Paul, but it was the other guys that helped him. That other guys ends up being a pretty important position.
Yeah, if I just would have looked at the box score and seen Clint Capella, which I thought was going to be a difference maker offensively, you know, he did have the 10 rebounds. He's always going to be a guy that's going to alter shots and block shots, but only two or three from the field. I would have said offensively, Houston might be in trouble. But then you look at Eric Gordon, who's always been one of the best six men in basketball. For him to go for 27 last night, I mean, he was a huge difference maker for the Rockets.
And that's what separates Golden State from everybody, Brown, is that their position of the other guys is Klay Thompson.
Right.
You know?
Right.
He's a star in his own. Other guys in Cleveland is J.R. Smith. In Golden State, it's Klay Thompson. Yeah, last night it was P.J. Tucker.
Golden State doesn't have that guy off the bench that really puts a lot of fright into you. I do think Jordan Bell's getting better. Sean Livingston's a guy. You know, obviously the career probably not what it would have been. If he wouldn't have gone down with that injury, he can do it in spots. Nick Young is a guy that can score, but he's a defensive liability. So you don't have that guy off the bench for Golden State that can actually do that. You've got that guy in Eric Gordon.
The lock hits last night. LT told you the Rockets were going to win that game. This series is exactly where I thought it would be after two games. It's split. It's 1-1.
Yeah, and it'll be 3-1 after games 3 and 4.
I thought it was going to be the other way around. I thought the Rockets would win game one, Golden State game two. They just flip it around. So you still give this series no chance of being a Houston win when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I'll pull back if they're able to win game 3 or 4.
Back in March, we told you Alabama-Texas likely was going to happen. It became official yesterday. Alabama going to Austin in 2022. Texas coming to Tuscaloosa in 2023. First question I got yesterday on Twitter after that was, do you think Nick Saban could still be coaching then? And you hear Chris Lowe and others who meet with Saban saying you could see 5 years. That gets you into the five-year window. You very much could see Nick Saban coaching in those games.
I could see it. I'm looking forward to this. Again, the neutral site game, I think the novelty's worn off a little bit. I think fans want to see the home and home. And talking about a great helmet game, Texas and Alabama, about as good as it gets.
Doesn't get better than that, really. I mean, two of the most historical programs ever. Is it Saban versus Tom Herman, you think? I mean, would you put the odds on that one?
That would be the betting favorite for me in Las Vegas.
I feel really good that Tom Herman's going to be there, and I would say about 80% Nick Saban. Will you guys want to make this agreement?
Yes.
I'm talking to Chip Brown and Mike Harge. We're going to do we'll do a simulcast.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We'll just do a full Friday show together from Austin.
Then they'll come back here in 2023. That will include us having to sign one more contract between now and then. I think we're in for that.
I'm planning on that.
Yeah, me too.
It's in my plans.
Absolutely. Another thing that happened yesterday in the SEC, the official announcement is coming up at 10 o'clock later this morning. But Arkansas is going to announce that when it's their home game year, they're going to play their trying to build rivalry game with Missouri in Little Rock. Now, if you're not familiar with War Memorial there in Little Rock, they've been playing every year there. The contract runs out this year when they play Ole Miss on October 13th. But moving forward, they're going to announce today that when it's Arkansas's home game every other year, Missouri-Arkansas will be played in Little Rock. It's just like Alabama and Legion Field used to be, with Arkansas playing in the state's biggest city.
Now, I don't know all the specifics behind this, but my guess is, first of all, that's your Thanksgiving. It's been Black Friday.
It's been a lot of Friday, yes.
Where that game has fallen. My guess is they've had a difficult time getting your Little Rock fans to come to Fayetteville on Black Friday because they're with their family on Thanksgiving. That's generally been like a 1:30 kick, I think. So maybe they're moving it closer to their fans and they've got a better chance of selling out Little Rock than Fayetteville.
I can't wait to see Bo Mattingly, our friend out there, their reaction to this. The players, I'm told from what I read last night, do not like playing in Little Rock. The stadium is smaller, not the same atmosphere, not the same locker rooms, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
blah.
Look, War Memorial, the times that I've passed by it, and it's been a long time. I mean, it's Legion Field with a fence.
Yep.
And it really is. And I don't think they've done a lot of renovations to it.
They've done some.
I've heard.
I guess they would have to do some to keep it upright.
It's been a good while since Alabama or Auburn has played there, but I remember the first time both those teams went up there, the reaction on this station, on Jocks, to the fans calling in are like, guys, that place is a dump.
100%.
And Fayetteville is sinking so much money. They're sinking so much money in that stadium. I mean, it was a shanty town in the end zone this year, but that's because they're building, you know, an end zone like everybody has. It's got a bunch of suites and crap in it.
That's what I tweeted last night, Brown. All these SEC schools have poured so much money for so few dates on these on-campus stadiums. Georgia, Florida even want to move their game out of Jacksonville on campus. I can't believe Arkansas is going to do this and play this in Little Rock. But maybe it's what they want. We don't talk a lot of recruiting, but the Elite 11 quarterbacks were announced yesterday. And if you don't think we got something going on with high school football in the state of Alabama right now.
One of the best quarterback crops we've ever had.
Bo Nix,
yep.
Who's going to Auburn. From Pinson, make sure I get these high schools right.
Yeah, you got that one.
He's an Elite 11 quarterback. Paul Tyson, who's going to Alabama. Hewitt Trustful, right?
Correct.
He was named Elite 11. There's only 11 of these. It's in the name.
All right.
There's two just in our state. And Talia Tungavaloa of Thompson, my school,
you got
Alabaster,
that right.
Mm-hmm. Also Elite 11 quarterback. So of the 11 quarterbacks in the country. The entire country. Three of them are right here in the Birmingham area. One committed to Auburn and two to Alabama.
I've seen all three play, Lance, and they can all three play. The one I saw the least of is Tyson. And the night I saw him, I can't remember the team they were playing, and this must have just been in Coach Floyd's game plan. They were throwing a lot of short stuff, so I didn't really get to see him push the field. But I've heard really good things about him. I've seen Bo Nix and Talia Tungavaloa play almost an entire game. Both those guys can play. I mean, they can play.
That's pretty incredible, though. More than 25% of your Elite 11s right here in Alabama.
The thing that jumped out, you know, Tungavaloa, you watch him, Dunaway, through the lens of his brother. It's probably unfair to him, but you've seen his brother play on an elite level. So that's your immediate comparison. Bo, you would compare him to his father, obviously, but that was a long time ago. The thing that impressed me most about Bo Nix was his pocket presence. He has a tremendous pocket presence. And just the small things, like knowing when to pull it down and run, what he does with a football when he pulls it down and runs. I mean, just the little things, it seems like he gets right.
I've only seen highlight tapes of him.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen him in person play an entire game. But he seems no knock to Patrick when he played at Auburn. And he was a great athlete. Bo seems to be more athletic than his dad was.
I would agree with that. Pat was a pretty good runner, though, wasn't he?
I'm sure
he was. But Bo seems to be better at that. He's a legit dual-threat guy.
Yeah, so that's the deal there. Interesting from Matt Hayes, and I'd like to get your thoughts before we go back to the phones, 834-9450. We'll take your phone calls on just about anything here on the show. You know that. But Matt Hayes, Sporting News, says the NFL awards its championship trophy, the winner of the Super Bowl, the Lombardi Trophy. He is in favor of the college football playoff cylinder, that trophy that is handed out at the end, being named the Slive Trophy. Now, I think politics may play too much into this. I don't know if the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and the ACC and the Big 12 would sign off on this. obviously the SEC would on that. Would you, I know you'd be okay, would you foresee there being a path to the other conferences signing off on one former conference commissioner
named
the championship trophy? Yeah,
I think that's tricky. I think it would be, he's deserving of it, Lance. I think it'd be a great honor to him, but I think just Jim Delaney would, in the back of his mind, think, as much as I respect Mike Slive, I don't want to hear it from my fans all the time that we're playing for a trophy named after the SEC.
And I'm sure Jim Delaney thinks with an ego that he's done as much or more than Mike Slive for his conference. So, you know, I look, a sad day yesterday, and I think there's going to be a lot of buzz about things like this. And I do think, back to the Hall of Fame, Mike Slive will ultimately be in the College Football Hall of Fame. But as far as a trophy being named after him that would represent the other Power 5 conferences, don't think it will ever happen.
First down.
Bigger shock in the upcoming season, the Browns going from 0-16 to the playoffs, or Ole Miss reaching the SEC championship for the first time ever?
Well, I think both would be a big shock, but we've seen it in the NFL. You can turn it around quickly, and there's a possibility, a path, to get to the NFL playoffs with a 9-7 record. Ole Miss going to the SEC championship, I would be absolutely floored.
I mean, neither have happened ever, right? I mean, we've had how many 0-16s have we had? Two? Three?
Three.
So nobody's ever done that, go from 0-16 to the playoffs, I would guess, out of those three. And Ole Miss has never reached the West. I think I would have, well, I mean, that seems impossible to do, to go from 0-10 wins, which is about what it would take. I mean, that's impossible in the NFL. You can't go from 0-10 wins.
Is Ole Miss even eligible? Are they banned this year?
Well, that's a great question.
No, that's a good question.
Good point, Jeff.
I didn't think about that.
So I don't know about that, but just that aside.
Hypothetically.
Hypothetically.
If they weren't banned.
I think I would be shocked more with Ole Miss.
I think I'd be shocked more with the Browns, though both will neither happen. Unlikely to happen. Because Tiamu is a serviceable quarterback. A.J. Brown, the receiving core. And they did beat Mississippi State last year. LSU's not great. I mean, lightning in the bottle twice for Ole Miss against Alabama and Auburn could get them there. I'm going to go more shocked with the Browns.
Second down.
If your life depended on it, which SEC head coach, current SEC head coach, would you take to break 90 at Augusta National?
This is a really tough one.
Yeah, this is tough. Now, typically quarterbacks are really good at golf, so Jimbo Fisher, I just don't know how much he's playing. I think Kirby plays a little bit. He's played Augusta National. He's a better athlete than advertised by body look.
Apparently, he can't get past number 12 without hitting it in the water, though.
That's what he said. He goes Spieth on 12.
Yeah, I don't think any of these guys are going to break 90, but if I had to go with one, I guess I would lean Kirby.
Saban plays Augusta once or twice a year, and I've heard he's broken 90 there. So I might actually go Nick Saban in this one.
They didn't see what course, but yesterday out there at – by the time he had to put the clubs up last summer, he played a round of par golf somewhere.
Oh, Saban did.
Yeah.
He shot a 72.
Yeah, somewhere. I don't know where, what course. It may have been North River, but he shot a 72
Galleria
somewhere.
Fun country.
Galleria Fun Country. So I tend to go Saban on that one.
Yeah,
that reason.
I think so.
You're missing Steve Spurrier. I mean, he was the logical choice.
He or Freeze would have been the lock in this one in the past.
Third down.
Which is a more likely combination? Justify wins the Preakness this weekend, and Boston wins the Eastern Conference Finals in six games, or Justify does not win the Preakness and Golden State wins in six?
Give me a. I still think Cleveland's going to make this a series. I think they win games 3 and 4 probably. And I think Justify is going to win the Preakness.
I'm going to say Justify does not win the Preakness. We start increasing the length a little bit more. And I think the horse is going to, you know, have the wrong mindset, be fat and happy and not win this weekend.
Horse mindset? You don't like his interviews right now? Body language?
Too many oats.
Yeah.
He's too cocky.
I'll go with Lance. Justify wins, and Boston wins in six.
Fourth down.
Horse is cocky going into this weekend, man.
If you were going to relocate to one of these cities, Jim Dunaway, represented in the NBA and NHL Conference Finals, would it be Boston, Cleveland, Houston, Las Vegas, Oakland, Tampa Bay? That's probably off the board for you. Washington or Winnipeg?
Well, I used to want to live in Tampa. That's where I wanted to live. That's why I'm a fan of those teams.
Do not like that city at
all. Yeah,
I think it's a rat city.
But every time I spend time there, I don't like it like it doesn't look like it does on the postcards. Let me put it
dirty,
that way.
Too much traffic.
So
that's true of anywhere.
Tampa's off the list for me. I love Boston, but it would be too cold in the winter. I've never been to Cleveland. Houston is a rat hole too. Vegas is just, as much as I like debauchery, it's too much. Oakland, a dirty town.
Lance is going to end up in Winnipeg.
I think I'd go to D.C. I'd be broke because I think it's so expensive, but I think I would go to Washington, D.C.
I think I'd pick D.C. out of these.
Well, you guys are thinking about living in Northern Virginia. That's different. You got to live in the province.
Arlington.
You got to live in the district.
I'm going to live down there by, they've redone the Navy Yard area down around Nationals Park. That's where I'm going to live.
Foggy Bottom.
Of all these, I would live in Tampa because I still get the flavor of SEC football. Boston would be my favorite town, but I'm with LT. I don't like cold weather.
Too much snow.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good sports, though.
But I don't like Florida when I'm not on the ocean. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Like Florida summer, not on the ocean.
It's just hot and humid.
Bay Area.
You're going to get the breeze.
Tampa's a nice area.
Oh, it is. I'd go Tampa, I guess. I'm six stakes up, but this weekend, Justify is trying for a triple crown. We've got a stake bet of Jason Day winning a Masters this year or Justify winning the triple crown. And you're telling me that when Justify runs this weekend, he goes off as heavy favorite again this weekend.
Yeah, I'm going to try to find you an updated number. The last I saw 1-2, so he was pretty heavy favorite.
After seeing Jason Day play the Players' Championship round.
Yeah, 1-2 still.
One thing that is, well, I mean, he says it's no big deal, but he hit a shot on 16 on Sunday and immediately grabbed his shoulder. The guy's made out of a pane of glass. He stays hurt.
That's why I wanted to bring it up. Have you heard a follow-up to
that? Well, he said it's nothing to worry about. It's fine, but with his history, you have to worry about it.
Well, they said in the broadcast when he hit that shot, and it was in the middle of the fairway, it wasn't like he hit a root or
something. No, I mean, he was, yeah.
They said, rarely do you see a golfer in that situation hurt anything. And they watched the replay. They said, I have no idea how he hurt anything.
Yeah, it wouldn't make any sense at all. Maybe a back. I mean, a back could go out at any time.
Yeah, but he's had his shoulder. Random ailments.
Oh, yeah.
Vertigo.
Yeah.
So that seems advantage you is what I'm getting to. On that
I would say that. Now, Good Magic's your one shot this weekend. I mean, that's really the only horse that's going to be able to run with Justify.
Come on, Good Magic.
And Good Magic pushed Justify at the Derby.
So this is Pimlico, right? Outside of Baltimore or in Baltimore? Is that where they run the Preakness?
Is that right?
Yeah, and then Belmont's actually in Belmont, right?
Yeah. Upstate New York,
I
right?
I think that's right. So this is like they run for different kind of flowers.
They've been doing it a while, 14 years before that old lady was born in Russia.
So they've run a lot of these. That happens this weekend there at the Preakness. No basketball tonight. We do get more hockey. Lightning and Capitals tonight. Caps up 2-1, 7 o'clock NBC Sports Network. And it's All-Star Weekend in NASCAR. Kevin Harvick, 5 wins this year. Kyle Busch, 3 wins. A couple of guys to keep an eye on as they do the All-Star race happening again this weekend. I did want to bring up Brandon Kennedy. And Nick Saban got asked about this yesterday, the guy who wants to transfer. We did not talk to the commissioner about this, but he has helped in these rulings in the past. Do you think Brandon Kennedy ends up either at Auburn or Tennessee or another SEC school, or do you think Brandon Kennedy ends up grad transfers outside the SEC?
I would say grad transfers outside the SEC. That's just my guess based on no inside information at all.
LT, do you have a guess on that?
Yeah, I would go outside too. I just think just a lot of work to actually stay in conference.
And there's
it's
a
like
lot
an
of places,
easier battle just to transfer elsewhere.
A lot of places you can go play football too. And I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that's my guess.
But did you not think Maurice Smith was going to be the same situation back when he ended up playing successfully at Georgia?
I kind of did, yeah.
So if he holds on, he may end up at Tennessee or Auburn.
Yeah.
We will see. Something to keep an eye on with Brandon Kennedy and, of course, Joe Burrow, the free agent quarterback from Ohio State who's still shopping his wares around. College football bowl projections. Everybody has them. I mentioned college football news. Sporting News did it yesterday as well. I'm going to give you SEC team, and you tell me how happy the fan base is with 100 being brown, happy with everything in life, and 1 being not happy with anything with this bowl projection. They have 11 bowl teams out of the SEC. Ole Miss is not eligible, and there's a couple others that you'll notice who's not here. We'll start at the top with Alabama playing in the national championship game against Clemson.
That's going to be a 100. By the way, we had 9 SEC bowl teams last year. But I would say 100 for Alabama.
Yeah. Boy, man, that'd be 4 straight years for that game, huh?
But what if Alabama played Clemson and lost?
That would be a 90.
Oh, Well, we've seen it. I mean, what would you say the fan base was the first time that happened?
64.
Oh, that bad.
Now, you remember the calls we got after the loss.
I mean, that was
Tampa.
A tough way to lose, too. I mean, that was the last play of, you know, basically the last play of the game.
I think that was pretty immediate. But I think when everybody looked back, you know, and reflected on the season, yeah. I think it was probably a 90. I still think 90% of the Alabama fans would be okay with playing for the national championship.
Georgia in the Sugar Bowl, which means they probably won the East, but lost in the championship game to Alabama.
That's going to be tough to swallow because I think Georgia fans think the next obvious step is winning the SEC championship and the national championship, not just one of them.
But if you're realistic and you lose guys like Roquan Smith and Nick Chubb and Sony Michel, you know, a lot of people view that it's going to be a step backwards.
I go 85.
I would probably say 70. I'd go less than you. I think there is an expectation that Georgia's going to be in the college football playoff again this year, at least from their fan base.
Auburn doesn't win their division. They go to the Citrus Bowl.
I think that's going to be 50.
I mean, I'm assuming in that game they've probably lost to both Georgia and Alabama. Maybe not. They've lost to one of the two.
Those are the three best teams in the SEC. All three of those teams have expectations of being in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's 9-3 or 10-2 for Auburn, and I think Auburn fans are going to be upset
about
that.
Probably 65 or 70.
So here are the other teams that have varying degrees of expectations when we play SEC football in 105 days. South Carolina, Outback Bowl.
It's about what they did last year, 9-4. I don't know. I guess you got to be
pretty
content.
Happy with that. Yeah, as a South Carolina fan, I'd say that's
playing on New Year's Day.
90.
Not like it's the house in Tuscany or anything.
No, I mean, that's South Carolina football.
I wouldn't go 90. I think 90 and up is getting to Atlanta, which is unrealistic.
Mississippi State and the Gator Bowl.
I mean, first year for Joe Moorhead. I mean, that probably means you've finished third in the West, the way you've painted this.
Maybe the best Mississippi State roster in modern Mississippi State football history.
Yeah, I would probably say an 80 for
or
that.
Or since 2014.
Yeah, I think they would take that. I think 70 or 80.
Yeah.
Military Bowl.
Four.
Kentucky.
You're bowling again, so I think you got to be content. There's no expectation for Kentucky this year. I think you can make an argument that this is a 5-win Kentucky team, so if you were to get to a bowl, I think that's a win.
That's sort of where I trend.
First of all, I had no idea the SEC sent people to the military bowl.
I think when you have 11, you start filling in space.
Yeah. I mean, I guess so. It's a bowl game for Kentucky.
Belk Bowl, Charlotte, LSU.
No, you're disappointed in that.
I mean, 9 wins last year.
Yep.
That's going to drop them back further than 9 wins. And if it starts trending in the wrong direction for Orgeron.
Yeah, you're probably a 7 or 8 win team. And the way you've presented
Belk Bowl could get him fired.
The way you've presented this, you're fourth in the West, most importantly.
Missouri in the Music City Bowl. That's going to be a little disappointing with Drew Locke, I think.
Yes. I mean, 7 wins last year, so it's kind of status quo. And you're right, his final year, you would expect a little bit more.
Okay, swallow these for the last three. You ready?
All right, go.
Texas A&M and the Texas Bowl.
They were 7-6 last year. First year for Jimbo, you're probably in the Texas Bowl 7-6 again. You haven't taken a step forward, so I think you'd be very disappointed.
Yeah, I'm paying him $7.5 million. I expect immediate improvement.
Florida and Shreveport.
That's not going to get it done.
No, heavens no. Of course, you were 4-7 last year.
They didn't bowl last year, so it would at least be a 2-win improvement, but I think there's more expectation.
Okay, now swallow this and give me the, because I think your answer is going to be positive. But Jeremy Pruitt, Tennessee, in the Birmingham Bowl.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you were defeated in the SEC 0-8 in conference. So at least you're getting a couple of conference wins, and you're improving by 4 wins to at least 6 wins. Probably 6-6 would be the number.
But did you ever think you'd live to see a day that Tennessee fans would be happy to come to Birmingham, play in Legion Field, in the Birmingham Bowl?
No,
but what they've endured over this last decade, Brown. I mean, I never thought we'd live to see a time where they would hire a guy like Butch Jones.
You can see those bowl projections right there at the Sporting News and different reaction to the fan bases rolling in. Derek writes in and says, no way Auburn would be happy with that bowl selection.
Oh, I don't think so. Yeah.
We agree.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a really good chance if you're in the Citrus Bowl, you've lost to both Georgia and Alabama. In full disclosure, we have some law clerks that got so bored they came to visit our show today. And I asked the following legal question. Rockstar, your father's a prominent attorney here in town. You may know this answer. If I steal the pen from the bank, have I robbed the bank? Like, you know how they got the pen, Rockstar?
Yeah, well, is it still on the chain? Are you physically removing?
No, I physically removed the chain, that little ball chain they got, and I steal the pen.
That's a little bit of theft. It's a theft of property.
But if I robbed the bank, it's in a bank.
Robbing is with gunpoint. It's with an with a.
Well, I didn't have a weapon.
Yeah, and I would think monetary value of that pin is
99 cents.
Yeah, 30 cents.
Yeah, well, it's banked. There's markup.
It's gonna be a misdemeanor.
So it's just misdemeanor, you think?
Yeah.
Okay. Spring is here, and there's still time to get Scott's Turf Builder Weed and Feed. I like to make the young generation think, Jim. They're never going to be attorneys if they can't answer questions like this.
Was better than my question.
Which was?
Yanny or Laurel.
Oh, yeah.
Did you hear that yesterday?
Yeah. Spring is here. There's still time to get Scott's Turf Builder Weed and Feed. It feeds to thicken your lawn and kills more than 50 pesky weeds. Guaranteed. Pick up a bag today.
Did you guys hang around and see what they did to Barkley?
I did. That was
night?
Funny.
They were playing the audio. And Yanny and Laurel, that was your choices when they played the audio. Shaq was like, Laurel. And then Ernie and, no, Shaq said Yanny. And then Laurel was from Ernie and Kenny. And Chuck's looking around and he's like, I heard donuts. And everyone laughs and they play it again. And over the air, you're hearing the real audio that everyone else is hearing. But they're playing a joke on on Charles.
They're playing donuts.
Pumping into his earpiece, donuts. And finally, Ernie says, let's really play what Charles has heard.
That's
and
pretty
it has
funny.
The same voice going, donuts.
Oh, man.
Donuts. And it was pretty funny. Speaking of fun, Hard Knocks every year, something we look forward to in the HBO. They've announced the team that will be the NFL focus on Hard Knocks, and that team's going to be LT?
The Cleveland Browns. We mentioned them earlier on the show in Four Downs, a team that went 0-16 last year under Hugh Jackson. Will appear on the series, which is airing for the 13th time. Now, I agree with Brown. This series from HBO has lost its luster a little bit. I watched 2 years ago when the Rams were featured. But I think this is kind of interesting because you've got such a rebuild under John Dorsey in this organization, and Baker Mayfield will be an interesting study. He bust into camp, and he'll be competing with Tyrod Taylor. So I don't think this is the worst choice for HBO.
I mean, this show is one I probably haven't watched in 2 or 3 years, and it used to be appointment TV for me, but it just kind of ran its course. And the Browns do nothing for me. I mean, is Baker Mayfield, you think he's just going to crank it up because he's on camera? I think it would be the exact opposite, Lance.
Yeah, I think he'll be a little camera
shy. Yeah, I think he'll be very reserved because he knows his reputation, and he's trying to send a message to the rest of Cleveland, the city of Cleveland, that he's not who they think he is.
But I just want to see how that organization is actually run.
Well, poorly. I don't know if you've looked at their record of late.
I just wonder how different it's going to be, though, new regime.
I mean, I don't know how entertaining Hugh Jackson is. He seems like a fairly entertaining guy. He's a good coach. He's just a bad spot.
Did any of you watch any of those season with Notre Dame or season with Navy?
No.
I didn't watch any of those either.
That's on Showtime.
Yeah. But the Navy interests me, but I just didn't.
I recorded the Navy, but never watched it.
And normally, I'm all about the behind-the-scenes stuff. I did catch some of the Gonzaga one. It was fairly interesting.
I saw none of Gonzaga. Some of the Navy one. The Navy one was well done. None of the Michigan one, a little when they did Notre Dame.
We've gotten fat and happy on our accessibility. I mean, these are things we used to crave. Now that we have them all the time, we don't want them.
I like Hard Knocks because it's the original, and the NFL one because it seems to be a little bit more edgier. If I'm a Browns fan, I'm not happy about this. Baker Mayfield seems to be a guy who needs a little solitude, a little focus, and extra cameras following him around. I feel like he will showboat a little bit.
Oh, I disagree. I think the exact opposite.
You don't think he'll play to the camera
at
all?
I think he's going to try to play mature quarterback, ready to take that leap and lead a city.
Well, then I'm happy if I'm
Browns fan. He knows his reputation. That's what I'm saying. He knows his reputation, and he's going to try to show Browns fans, I'm a mature guy. You've invested the first round pick in me wisely.
Well,
so
then,
I think you're going to get the exact opposite.
Yeah. I'm glad the camera's going to be there.
But it's going to make it more boring for us. I mean, I don't know any other personalities on this team.
I mean, they've had a receiver suspended for PEDs or
Josh Gordon,
substance abuse every year.
Will be interesting because a guy that has been off the field more than on the field and still has potential to be a top 10 wide receiver in the league.
Jarvis Landry is there, my Dolphins. So, I mean, he can be an interesting guy, Jarvis Landry. He's a good guy.
I wonder if they'll focus any on Joe Thomas, newly retired.
Who's a very personal guy who should have been in consideration for the Monday Night Football analyst host.
But is a Brown lifer and a guy that still is going to be really close to the organization.
If I was producing the show, I would pull out one or two of the infamous Dog Pound, and I would follow them and their day-to-day love of the Browns, too. I would factor that in as well. Follow those guys to practice, show that guy in a coat and tie when he goes to work, whatever he does, and then on the weekend he's you know, pounding beer cans on his head and wearing a dog mask.
I think that would be good. I think the history of the Browns is going to be important, too. I think we all forget that back in the 50s, the Browns were more successful than the Patriots of today. I mean, the Browns were winning every other championship back before the Super Bowl. So it was a great organization back then. It's just totally fallen apart. And I do think Joe Thomas would be an interesting angle. First year in retirement after decade plus of being one of the best offensive linemen we've ever seen.
The housing market is hot. There are three times more buyers than sellers. It's more important now than ever to make sure you have your financing in place before you even find the house. Get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert, LLC.